One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Jules Von Hepp.
Hello, I'm Sarah Powell.
And welcome to Wobble, a podcast about happiness and body confidence.
Because we all wobble.
On this episode of Wobble, we have our first guest of series three, the very excellent, very clever Laura Thomas. Laura is a nutritionalist. She has a PhD and she specialises in intuitive eating at the London Centre for Intuitive Eating. She has just published her first book, Just Eat It, which is very good and you'll hear all about. And she's just generally brilliant. So if you've ever been on a diet or been obsessed with food, this will be incredible for you.
I mean, I've been so excited to have you, Laura, on Wobble. I mean, it's actually worth doing the whole of the third series just to have Laura on. Because I have so many things to ask you. And I mean, one of the main reasons that I've loved following you, particularly on Instagram, but also with the book, I feel like everything you talk about and everything you post, it makes me go, it's me. Hi. Yeah, you're talking about me. That's me there, actually. And to the point, I mean, you know, because I'm someone who spent their whole life losing or gaining weight. Yeah. That's been my absolute story. And if I am losing it, I'm on a diet with all the rules, you know, and all the restrictions. And when I'm not, world, stand back, because I'm putting it on. And then right. It's the constant conversation of, right, well, when am I going to start losing weight again? And it's just, that's been my reality yeah. forever. Yeah. So I was so excited to find you and the book, which is, we should mention, is Just Eat It. And I just want to read the front of it, how intuitive eating can help you get your shit together around food. But I was just so excited because there just seemed to be an alternative, mm-hmm. which had never even occurred to me. Yeah. Food's always been a best friend mm-hmm. or, I mean, a terrible enemy. And mm-hmm. that, and it's always kind of been in that sort of space, really. So, I mean, let's start off. What is intuitive eating?
Okay, so I think what you said there, Sarah, was so interesting. When you talked about I was either losing or gaining, and what that said to me is something that my clients repeat to me all the time, is that I'm either fully on the bandwagon or I'm fully off of it.
Yeah.
Intuitive eating is when we just obliterate the bandwagon. We just get rid of it entirely. See you, bandwagon. We're not having any of you anymore. So intuitive eating is a set of principles that helps us reconnect with the messages and the signals that our body is sending us for things like, in particular, hunger and fullness, but also what gives us pleasure and satisfaction and energy and stamina, and really just helps us feel well without following all the external rules and restrictions that end up making us feel nuts about food.
Good. I mean, straight away. And I know I've already said this. I just never imagined that this was even a possibility.
No, and most people don't. They just think that dieting is the only way to live. And so when they come across the principles of intuitive eating, it can be really mind-blowing. And it can feel like a little uncomfortable for some people sometimes. And that's okay, you know, like if this is blowing your mind...
It's not a surprise.
But can I just get one thing straight? So this is really like, it's closing your eyes, listening to your body and going, okay, what does my body want to eat right now? Rather than thinking, oh, I can't eat that because of the calories that are in it, or I can't mm-hmm. have that because I had that yesterday, yeah. or somebody said this while I was eating this, so I can't necessarily. It's getting rid of all of that I can't and saying, okay, what do I actually need as opposed yeah. to want?
Yeah. So oftentimes I'll say to clients, you know, if we are stuck in our heads about food and we're constantly bargaining and negotiating with ourselves about what to eat and when to eat, and, you know, if you have like the bread basket, can you also have the mashed potatoes? And there's just this to-ing and fro-ing constantly. If we end up breaking one of these self-imposed rules, what's the overriding feeling or sensation that we have in our bodies?
Well, it's guilt. For me, it's just guilt. And that guilt can last for days. Yeah. That can haunt me. You know, one spag bol, it could be all over for me for the week.
Game over.
Yeah.
Right? But if that is the overriding sensation or feeling that we have in our body, how do we know how the food is making us feel? If that's all we're sensing in our bodies. So we want to strip that back. We want to get rid of the guilt and the anxiety and the shame that's associated with eating so that we can tune back into our cues for hunger and fullness and pleasure and satisfaction and what gives us a sense of stamina and well-being rather than, oh, well, I feel guilty for eating that food, so I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah. And we should point out as well that it's very easy to go, well, we're talking about the perceived bad foods, so you know, kind of processed sugar and fat and things like that, but actually it's equally, it could be clean eating, couldn't
sure,
it, or it
yeah.
could be those kind of other sort of wellness diets, if you like,
right, that we're only eating those foods not because we like them, not because we enjoy them, but because they make us feel virtuous,
yes,
or good, you know, we're good when we eat these foods, or if we don't eat those foods then we're bad. Like that's a pretty precarious foundation on which to build that relationship with ourselves, is predicated on, you know, whether we eat perceived good or bad foods.
Yeah.
I was going to say with these, like a lot of this can and can't, carbs is like the main one that I hear within my world constantly.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm off carbs. I'm not eating carbs. I'm not having bread. I'm not having pasta. I can't eat that at this time. And it's that association with time and what you're doing day to day. Because instantly when you said to me, I can't, like foods that maybe you're eating that are clean, I was like, oh, this could be me. And eating foods that maybe you don't like, but then you have the association of, but this is healthy, so I'm going to eat it and I'll feel better for that. But there's things like I've learned this year where my body doesn't like grains and it really bloats when it has grains. And so instead of just thinking, oh, okay, well, this is a form of protein, actually, it doesn't want that. It really doesn't want that. It doesn't enjoy it. But carbs, like, I like, my body likes bread. It doesn't respond badly to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I kind of feel like I'm on this wave, and I'm really like, this is such a nice podcast to be doing because it's engaging with what your body actually wants. And carbs is like the big one. That's what everyone talks about.
Yeah.
Carb phobia is rampant.
Yes.
I see it all the time. And it's so interesting.
Poor
people
carbs.
People will come to me and say, like, I don't have any energy and I feel tired all the time. And then I'll look at what they've been eating. There are no freaking carbs in there. And I'm like, yeah, it's not really surprising. But then when I say, well, okay, what about if we incorporate some carbohydrates or some grains in order to balance out what you're eating? They look at me like, what the hell is she talking about? She's telling me to eat. And there's just like this sense of doom on their faces. And carb phobia runs so deep.
Yeah.
And there's, we could do a whole podcast on carbs if you wanted. And why they're important.
I'd be very interested in that. Can we bring carbs? Can we eat carbs? Because I want to get into sort of where it all comes from, really. Mm. Where it all stems from, this idea that, you know, because it started somewhere that somebody's gone, oh, carbs are the enemy, carbs are the problem.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of spread, sort of filtered down to us, if you like. And again, since I've been following you, Laura, I am staggered how prolific diet culture is everywhere, to the point where you go to the supermarket and there's just signs up that, you know, even just to go, this is healthy food. So it straight away makes you go, oh, well, this stuff must be unhealthy then. You know, healthy snacking, all those kind of words that we just, we take as given, but they're not, are they?
I think it might be helpful to even explain why it's unhelpful to dichotomize foods as good or bad. Because people might be kind of wondering, well, you know, I want to eat healthy foods. I want to be healthy. What's wrong with that? And there's nothing inherently wrong with it. The problem, as I see it, and as a lot of my clients experience, is that when we create a food hierarchy or we dichotomize foods as good or bad, we end up putting those foods that we perceive to be bad sort of up on a pedestal. And that creates this forbidden fruit effect. So if we say, for instance, cookies are bad, I'm not going to eat cookies, I'm not doing sugar-free February or whatever.
Which will probably be a thing somewhere.
What happens then is that you, because you're restricting and depriving yourself, there's a little part of your brain that just kind of like starts flashing in the back of your brain that's like, I need to eat cookies. I need to eat cookies. I need to eat cookies. And so as soon as you come into contact with cookies, you're like a crazed person.
Yeah.
And you eat all of the cookies standing up over the sink as quickly as humanly possible so that people don't see you doing it, or as quickly as possible so you can sort of almost pretend to yourself that it didn't even happen. And
yes, it's me. It's me.
And no judgment. We've all been there.
Yeah.
I'm a nutritionist. We're the worst when it comes to food rules, right? And so it's kind of, when we talk about the concept of food neutrality, or bringing foods down off of a pedestal and saying, okay, this is fair game, and this is fair game, and this is fair game, we're not saying that those foods don't have different nutritional values. Of course they do. All different foods have a different combination of nutrients. None are inherently good and none are inherently bad. They are. But when we start labeling them, that's when we can kind of run into trouble. And either we end up binging our faces off eating those foods.
Yes.
Or we end up feeling the guilt, the shame, the stress, that voice in our heads that doesn't shut up and takes over like 80% of our brains.
Yeah. And it is consuming like that, you know, and I love you sort of talk about it in the book. Like imagine all the time and the energy and the headspace that you'd get back if you weren't thinking and worrying and sort of, just coming to terms with what I've eaten or what I haven't eaten or what I'm allowed. It is exhausting, isn't it?
It's draining. And so I do this exercise with my clients where I give them the printout of a brain, and it's just like a black and white brain, and they have to kind of color in what proportion of their head is dedicated to thinking about their bodies, thinking about food, thinking about exercise, thinking about nutrition. And for some of them, it's like 75-80%. And so there's only 20%, if that, to think about everything else in your life. And so what I'll also encourage them to do is make a brain that more reflects, you know, their other interests and how they want to be spending their time, rather than just thinking about food all the time.
Yeah. And I bet that, God, that would be shocking, actually. I think to see that mapped out in that way.
I was just sat here thinking, I wonder what my brain would do. I wonder where I would see this. I do it with a couple of my clients when I say, write down the things that you like about your life and the things you don't like, and then look at what you're doing and what you're not doing.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be people now going, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
How much time am I spending?
That's it. Because for somebody that, you know, anyone like me who's kind of been in that diet world, on it, off it forever, there's a real fear for me around trusting myself.
Because
I'm just convinced I'll just go head first into a tin of Fox's favourites and you'll never see me again, and I'll balloon. Do you know what I mean? Because I would have definitely said this. I can't trust myself around food.
Yeah. And that is such a common fear. And there's a section on this in the book because I hear it all the time. And there's so much I could say on this. But if we think about it, this fear has been kind of instilled in us from diet culture, right? So you've all seen women's health type articles that say, stay fuller for longer, and, oh, actually, you're not hungry, you're just thirsty, just drink some water. So we've had it kind of drilled into us that we can't trust our bodies. So of course you're going to have that fear. And I'm not saying that there isn't a learning curve associated with getting back in touch with those signals. And I'm not saying that you're not going to have a bath in some Fox's favorites for a little while. But ultimately, so I love doing this kind of thought experiment with people. So if you are somewhere where you can sit and close your eyes and not about to walk in front of a car, then just for a second think, and you guys can do this experiment.
I'm going to do it. Let's do it.
Close your eyes and just imagine Sarah waking up and for breakfast raiding the biscuit tin. And then doing that again for a mid-morning snack, and then at lunchtime, and that's all you're having is just this biscuit tin. And then come your afternoon snack, you're having it again. Are you gonna want to keep eating the biscuits at dinner time?
No. I feel sick. I do. I feel sick with it already. Yeah. I'm like, yeah.
So that's telling me right there, you do know how to trust your body. Yeah. Because if you were to eat that way all day long, you're going to feel nauseous. You're going to feel icky. You're not going to have any energy. You're going to be in a terrible mood, right? And your body will tell you, hey, let's get some broccoli in here.
Yeah.
Let's get some chicken breast.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to want to keep doing that. But because we're so stuck in our heads and overcomplicating and overthinking food, we don't actually pay attention to the messages that our body is sending us.
No.
We're kind of cut off from below the neck. So all the tools and things that I present in the book are about helping you reconnect with your body and finding that mind-body balance.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's saying, don't use your head, you know? Like, we still have to think about food, but we have to kind of put it in its place as well. And that, you know, it should take up some amount of time, but it shouldn't be taking up 80% of our brain space.
Mm. Yeah. I just literally just read this in the book on the way here. You talk about weight loss, because straight away, and I think there'll be probably people listening to it, I was like, oh, great, Laura's found the answer for me. I am somebody, and I can sit here now, I can confidently say right now, I want to lose weight,
yeah.
Right? I don't feel as good as I did sort of a few months ago when I've definitely put weight on, particularly since my wedding, because, you know, the car crash diet,
sure.
Wedding diet, yeah. Happened. And I completely went the other way, yeah. Obviously, because I lost it and lost it and lost it for the wedding. And the moment, I mean, we had a cheese toastie on the night when we got back to the hotel. I was like, I'm eating everything. And so I have put weight on. And so now it's very easy to approach intuitive eating and go, great, this is the answer for me, getting the weight off again.
Yeah.
And that's, I literally just read that bit in the book where you're like, no, you're just going to have to park that for a minute. But it's scary because, again, you're letting go, aren't you?
For sure. And again, that really speaks to the conditioning that we've had from diet culture, which promises us that, you know, when we lose weight, we're going to also, you know, be cooler and smarter and more lovable and more valuable. And it's this really insidious promise that we're told that we're going to get this pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Like, mm. We're going to wake up one day and be freaking Beyonce. Right? It's not going to happen. And so there's a part of that that's just coming to terms with, you know, like, all the things that you're telling yourself that you can do once you've lost weight, you can do it right now.
Yeah.
Guess what? Mm. That's the kind of spoiler is actually, you can do it right now. You just need to kind of get out of your own way and go do the thing that you want to do.
It has been my biggest, I call it, when I do sort of work with Celebrate Yourself, I call it the waiting room. So you place yourself, and for me, weight loss has always been my biggest waiting room. When I lose weight, I can wear the clothes I want. Yeah. When I lose weight, I'll nail my personal style. Yeah. Until then, I'll just have to wear.
Oh my God, you have the coolest style ever.
So many people do it, and you can do it in so many different ways, can't you? Like, when I get that job, when I meet somebody, when I get in a relationship, all that kind of stuff. So it is, and I don't know why weight loss particularly, whether it's because it's just such an enigma, or we're just fed this idea that, like you said, there's this magical golden place, you'll wake up one day, you'll be, I remember being in the gym, and I was like 19, and I remember really clearly seeing Rihanna on like MTV, whatever, when MTV still showed music. and I remember thinking, I've got to get to that.
Yeah.
And there was a complete disconnect between my reality and my body and Rihanna. And I mean, of all the people to aim for.
Right.
But it was really palpable. Like, it was genuinely, and it was only recently even that I've looked back and gone, oh my God, like, I genuinely thought, if I'm not that, I've failed.
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to say, for people who are listening who still, you know, are still hoping to lose weight, or really, you know, they may be approaching intuitive eating with that mentality, like, so many of my clients come to me saying, I still want to lose weight, even though I'm telling them it's not going to happen, really.
Yeah.
But I just want to, like, point out that, you know, if you still have that as a goal, or, you know, you're still invested in that as an outcome, like, that's totally, like, understandable, because that's all we're ever fed is the thin ideal. That's all we see in the media, that's all we see on social media, that's what we're told is healthiest, that's what we're told is going to bring us happiness. And it takes time to kind of unpack that, what is essentially a lie. The other thing to point out here is that actually dieting and weight loss attempts are one of the strongest, from a scientific perspective, are one of the strongest predictors of long-term weight gain.
Yeah.
So that's not ideal. You're kind of, we're all shooting ourselves in the foot. But also, that is not to say, and I think people often get really confused about this part of intuitive eating, because we're letting go of dieting, it doesn't mean that we're not letting go of health, and that intuitive eating is anti-health. And what I'll often say to people is that intuitive eating, we don't know if it's going to help you lose weight or not, right? I have no idea what your body is going to end up doing ultimately if you're listening to those signals that it's sending it. But what I can help you figure out is what is the healthy weight for you? And that might not be that size 6 or that size 8 that we have in our heads. That might be a much bigger size, but that's not predicated on a number on the scale. That's predicated on a healthy set of behaviors. And if you are binging and restricting and constantly in that cycle and only exercising when you're on a diet and then not moving at all when you're not on a diet, that's not healthy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That sort of all or nothing mentality, either being fully on the bandwagon or fully off of the bandwagon,
yeah,
that's also not healthy. So let's get to a place that is sustainable where you don't feel restricted. And ultimately, that's going to be a lot more sustainable.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at Burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
And when you say on the bandwagon, off the bandwagon, when you are displaying signs of being healthy, what should you be showing?
Okay, so I think of it in terms of the behaviors that you would be engaging in. So there's a really cool study, if I can kind of like nerd out for a second.
Go for it. Yes.
That I want to share with you. We all know, you'd have to be living in a freaking cave to not hear all the scare stories about weight and health. And so our idea of health gets really, really tied up in BMI and the number on the scale. And we often kind of overly simplistic that relationship. But just to kind of illustrate the difference between BMI and behaviors, there was this really cool study from the States that looked at 12,000 people. And they wanted to ask them how many health-promoting behaviors they engaged in on a regular basis. And so the behaviors that they were looking at were not smoking, not drinking to excess, so just kind of moderate drinking, exercising or moving your body for around about 30 minutes a day, so nothing like insane, and eating 5 a day. I think we can all agree that's like a fairly low bar, right? To yeah. engage in all 4 of those behaviors. But they were also interested in looking at people who weren't engaging in any of those behaviors. And so what they found is that people that weren't participating in any of those behaviors, there was what we would expect in terms of a more linear relationship between weight and health risk. So as people's weight went up, their health risk went up. But if people were to engage in just one of those 4 behaviors, If they were in the highest weight group, if they were to engage in one behavior, their risk was cut in half.
Wow. Just one of them. So that could be a bit more exercise. Wait. Yeah, go on.
I'm not even done yet.
God, we were excited, weren't we?
You got, yeah. Yeah. But there's more. So if people were to engage in all four of those behaviors, which we've already agreed aren't like that high a bar, their risk was exactly the same regardless of which BMI group they were in. So the people who had the quote normal BMI had the same risk as the people who had the quote highest BMIs. Mm. Their health risk was the same regardless of their BMI, just because they were engaging in these four behaviors. So what this is telling us, and there are other studies that kind of show this, and I go into it a little bit more in the book, is that it's our behaviors that are a stronger determinant of our health outcomes than the number on the scale.
Yes.
So
yes.
I understand that, because so many people are like, well, if I give up dieting, then I'm going to get fat. And I use fat in a sort of neutral descriptor way, but I'm going to get fat and then, I'm going to be unhealthy. That's not the case. And if you are, the way that you're controlling your weight and keeping your weight low is through an unhealthy means.
Yeah.
Then that's also not a great place to be.
It's absolutely, I always remember this, because I've done all of them and all the points and the calorie counting.
Yeah.
And I always remember there was this big thing for a while that salad was really unhealthy because salad dressing had more calories in, so you're better off eating a burger. And it was all, do you know what I mean? It was all, but it was exactly what you're saying. It's not thinking about health properties. It's literally thinking of calorie, that's the number that it says on a packet, and then forgetting that your body doesn't, it's not like you eat the food and your body goes, one calorie, yes, 45 calories. Yes, okay, that's 100. Do you know what I mean? We're so disconnected in that way. Yeah.
And we've kind of, we often look at nutrition through this reductionist lens, and it's also like an all or nothing lens as well, where, you know, just because you're eating five a day and you're eating some whole grains doesn't mean that if you have a cookie it's not going to wipe out the benefits from all of the other health things, don't you? And that's the mentality that a lot of my clients get into, which is like, or at least when they come to see me, they're like, well, if I have a cookie or a brownie or a donut, then that's a bad day, and the whole of the rest of the day is a write-off. What if you could just have a cookie and then get on with the rest of your life and it not be a big deal?
Yeah.
And you can still have vegetables for dinner, and you can still go for a walk, and, you know, have a chocolate after your dinner if you want. It's all okay.
God, it's big. It's big work, isn't it?
I think there's something that's really coming through here, and I need you to like clarify it for me. Mm. Being thin doesn't mean you're healthy.
Oh, for sure. One way that we can kind of look at health risk is we basically have two different stores of fat in our body. So we have something called subcutaneous fat, which is the fat that kind of accumulates around our hips and our thighs and our bums and our upper arms. And
very familiar.
We then have another type of fat called visceral fat, which accumulates around our internal organs, around our abdomen. And it's that visceral fat that is more of a predictor of health outcomes. So things like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, it's even been linked to Alzheimer's and breast cancer. Now, you cannot tell by looking at a person how much visceral
there
fat
goes my
they
next
have.
Question. Yeah. I'm taking my clothes off now.
Laura, what do you think?
It was really interesting. I was in because I'm also doing a master's degree at the moment in clinical nutrition, and they showed us an MRI scan that like sliced somebody in half. Not actually, but like the picture was a cross-sectional slice of a person, and the two people had the exact same BMI, but what you could really clearly see from this MRI is that one person had accumulated fat around their internal organs, the other person had just accumulated it around their hips and their thighs and their belly and places like that, which is a much kind of healthier way to carry weight, if you will. I think the things that we can say that we know for sure that, well, the biggest thing that we can do actually to reduce the visceral fat in our bodies is not go on a crash diet, which actually dieting has been associated with an increase in visceral fat.
It gets worse.
But actually just movement, just even 10 minutes a day of movement can help reduce visceral fat accumulation and help reduce our risk of those diseases that I mentioned.
Yeah, because it's amazing. We're talking so much, obviously, about intuitive eating, but there's so much body wisdom there, isn't there? There's so, you know, like even when the body knows it's got to walk or it's got to move or you've got to, do you know what I mean? Just if you get stiff or something and it's astonishing when you tune in, your body can go, I need to leave the house or I need a walk or you know, something. But
totally.
Yeah, I think we've just, it's like you said, we've just got so disconnected.
But, and the way that exercise is packaged and presented to us is it's to get a peachy bum, it's to get toned abs, it's for aesthetic reasons, and we don't, I mean, we're getting better now about talking about like the physical and mental health benefits and the benefits to like our sleep and our stress level and all of those kinds of things, which, you know, if you could imagine them plastered on the front of a woman's magazine, like that would be so much better than if we just focus on like this transformation or that transformation, which, you know, actually the evidence around using exercise for weight loss is actually pretty tiny and insignificant. Like, yes, it works in the short term. We're not saying that diets don't work in the short term, but in the long term, there's very little evidence to say that people who exercise more are going to have a lower BMI. And interestingly, some recent research has been looking at our sort of underlying motivations and intentions for exercising, and they found that people who exercise for health reasons as opposed to aesthetic reasons actually exercise more and are more likely to be intuitive eaters. So,
wow.
Yes.
There
you go.
Science. Oh gosh, it's all there, isn't it? We've just been taught not to trust it.
Yeah.
Just as a sort of starting point, let's say you're somebody like Jules and I, you know, I particularly have come through that diet culture. I'm terrified. I've got no sort of connection to my own trust levels of what I want or what I need. What, apart from buying and reading the book, what would be your first bit of advice for somebody like me?
So actually, it's not really directly related to the actual mechanics of intuitive eating, but the first thing I would say is to develop self-compassion. I spent a whole chapter talking about it, and again, the research around this is really interesting. Learning to give ourselves compassion when we're struggling with something, when something is difficult, whether that's body image, whether that's food, emotional eating, or just general life stuff. If we can learn to be a bit kinder to ourselves, that has been associated with better body appreciation, so better body image, and also higher intuitive eating, but also things like productivity, and it's a really cool concept. So just learning, and I go into how the how you do this in the book, but just learning to befriend ourselves a little bit, let ourselves off the hook, be a bit gentler, be a bit kinder to ourselves. That would be, like, learning that skill, I think, is just going to make the whole intuitive eating process much, much easier. And then the second thing I would say, just on a really like practical level, stop thinking of hunger just as like that like gnawing pit of our belly, like screaming, gurgling, right? That tells me that you've gone too hungry. You've let it go too long before, in between meals and snacks. And so think of hunger, because it can be detected in other parts of our body. So think of it in terms of shifts in our mood. So if we get really cranky all of a sudden, if we've got low energy and it has nothing to do with inadequate sleep, if we've got like a loss of concentration or focus or kind of a slight headache, so thinking of what's going on in our heads, what's going on just overall in our bodies. Do we feel kind of weak, shaky, almost that feeling like of low blood sugar? And as well as our stomach. So there are five places that it can show up in our bodies. So start tuning into that and tuning out of the MyFitnessPal, the Fitbit, all these external things, because if you continue to follow them, that's gonna undermine that trust that you have in your body.
Yeah, your body doesn't know it's 1 o'clock and that's lunchtime, does it? It just doesn't know. Laura, I mean, amen to the self-compassion all day long.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I could keep you here. As I said, I could kidnap you easily and just keep you here. We always ask everyone who comes on Wobble, if you do wobble, what makes you wobble?
I think this is probably going to sound hilarious because I've got all these letters after my name. But the thing that I think often I get in my head and have a bit of a wobble about is imposter syndrome. Yeah, even though I've written a book and I do this on a daily basis, you know, I have to be, obviously, working in nutrition, there's been a backlash against unqualified advice and poor information. So yeah, I can sometimes get in my head a little bit about that and be like, oh my God, am I saying the right thing? And so that, like, that piece of, yeah, just not feeling like you're quite good enough.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous. It's ludicrous, but I'm working on it.
and so many people will listen and go, yeah, it's me. Everybody, yeah. You know, what? Yeah. Well, no matter what field you're in or what your work is or, you know, even your home life and relationships and stuff, there's so many moments where we think, oh no, what if I'm going to get found out?
Yeah. Totally, 100% that. And so I had a lot of anxiety around the book coming out for that exact reason. Yeah. But something that I found, a resource that I really love, is called The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris, just as a little book if anyone wants to check it out. That's been my sort of like Bible, that and therapy.
Great, perfect. Between the two, there's nothing you can't do.
I'll figure it out, it's fine.
If people want to find you, Laura, if they want to know more about intuitive eating, the book's out now, it's Just Eat It, and they can follow you. Just remind us of your Instagram and everything.
It's at Laura Thomas PhD across socials. My personal website is laurathomasphd.co.uk. We have the London Centre for Intuitive Eating, .co.uk, which is for our online courses and one-to-one intuitive eating counselling. And my podcast is called Don't Salt My Game,
which is marvellous.
It's amazing.
As well. It's
thank
brilliant.
You. Thank
Laura,
you.
Thank you so much for being on Wobble.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
So this episode of Wobble had a really profound effect on me because I was listening back to it now. And what I was saying, and this was only a few weeks ago that we recorded this, about wanting to lose weight, I actually feel completely differently now about it. And this episode and Laura's teachings and the book have really, really helped me to accept myself and my body, right? Which has been huge. I mean, like, that's 35 years worth of conditioning that I am really working hard to change. And it is changing, which I never ever thought would happen. So if any of what you've heard on this episode resonates, please go and find Laura. Also, if you follow Jules, you'll know he is doing the most amazing work with body positivity and self-acceptance as well, which has had a really big impact on me and how I feel about myself. So yeah, please go and find both of them and just start, like Laura said, with that compassion and just a bit of acceptance. You know, we don't have to change. We really don't. We are enough as we are right now. Thank you so much to Laura for being our first guest on the new series of Wobble. If you like this podcast, please like and subscribe because it helps us so much. 5 stars, as Jules would say, please. And we will see you next time for another brilliant guest on Wobble.
Okay, I have 2 new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring.
For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.